listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
I thought I'd make a dramatic entrance with the twist of the head. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Bob Dean Show. Yay! Broadcast live from Santa Monica. Well, Santa Monica adjacent by one block. You can actually walk to where OJ killed Nicole from my place, though. The dingy bachelor pad. As you can see in the background, nothing, because we're still working on the renovations to the apartment. And then we can hang pictures. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I know I did. We did. Spent it with our neighbors, Art and Evelyn. And the weather, of course, is perfect in Los Angeles. It's a little overcast today. Last night, it got down to 54 degrees in our area on the west side, which is freezing for those of you that live anywhere else. And let's see, today, oh, yeah, the gardeners are next door. I had specifically asked them if they could use the leaf blower before or after, because this show is more important than their. Oh, somebody stole my Christmas cactus, y'all. Christmas cactus that I've had for 19 years, and it was beautiful, and it was lush, and it was huge, and I repotted it into this. It had to weigh 100 pounds, and I kept it underneath the staircase, the exterior staircase. And some mother stole it. A Christmas cactus. Anyway, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. And all the salutations of the upcoming season. Today, guess who's back? Linda B. Schneider. Linda Schneider.
Hi.
Hi, Linda. It's nice to see you. How's Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh is very, very cold. We had our first actual accumulation of snow this week. I'm not ready for that. I want to be out by the pool.
Better you than me. Better you. Better yuns than us.
That's right. Yens.
Yens.
That's the Pittsburghese. Yens.
I told you I spent summers in outside of Pittsburgh in Brownsville and Uniontown when I was a child. My parents are from those areas.
Right.
It's good to see you. I can see the background. Your log home is beautiful. The fireplace is beautiful. Last time you and Kathy were on. Oh, hi, Kathy. Kathy's not with us today. She's in transit from New York City to Palm Beach, Florida, where she lives. The Cedar Direct, tell us about it.
Cedar Direct. Cedar kind of says the whole thing.
Yep.
The best wood that you can possibly use to build a log home is cedar.
And tell the website first, real quick.
The website is www.cdloghomes.com.
And did your daughter Nora, didn't she put
she
that
designed
together?
And did that website. It's absolutely
because it's beautiful. And I didn't, the first thing I thought when you get log home was something lovely and traditional. But man, your designs are just fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. I've designed all the houses for all the years I've had this company. So that's like, that's my favorite thing to do is design a house and then see the customer living happily in it when it's completed.
I bet you most of your business is referral, isn't it? I'm guessing.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a lot of referral.
Yeah. And so people have something in mind when they come to you, but do they often, most of the time, leave it in your discriminating hands to design and build?
Some people we start from scratch. Some people have an idea of a home that's already existing on our plans and our website, and we want modifications to that. But in 30 plus years, I won't say how many, I have had one customer who walked in and said, I want that house with no changes. So it's truly a custom design home to be what you want it to be.
That's freaking exciting. I mean, you are so accomplished, Linda, in so many different fields. Medical field.
Thank you.
Public relations. How's the cosmetic? You have a cosmetics and skincare. Excuse me, a skincare
yes,
line.
Skincare line.
Evie, your granddaughter.
Yes, my little sweet granddaughter. And it's going really well. Dr. Goff is doing a promotion at his office next week, so it's going to be like kind of like a mini workshop with an injector doing injections as well. So it should be a fun time.
Well, your daughter is Nora and your son is Mason. And the last time we were talking about Mason and his music.
Yes, Mason is my grandson, actually.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, he is my grandson, and he's
so young.
He is doing absolutely wonderful with his music. It's a new passion for him, and he's really so passionate about it. It's crazy.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, getting the encouragement from the family is the best part about it, as we spoke last time. Before we start talking about your project in the upcoming film, 116 McDougal, I do like to mention the super cool fact to everybody listening to the Bob Dean Show, yay, and watching on Bob Dean Show on Facebook, is that you are literally from Mayberry.
I am indeed from Mayberry.
Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
It's exactly like the show. It's so crazy. The guy who Floyd the Barber was fashioned after was like one of my father's really close friends. And he only passed away like in the last year and a half or so. And I always loved, first thing I would do is go to Floyd's. He was still working. He was in his 90s. And he was still working that barbershop, and he actually was cutting hair. So it was really cool. They say you can't go back home again, but I can always watch a rerun.
You know what? Seriously, that is beautifully said, and you're lucky for that. It's like, you know, my hometown, well, I was born in now historic Levittown, Pennsylvania, but I lived there until I was about, my family did until I was about 12. I call Nashville, Tennessee, my home, because that's where I hit puberty and went to college. And, you know, my folks are buried there, and I have a world of friends from high school, college.
Right.
But I haven't been back in years, and I don't think I ever will go, because it's Nashville is such a boom town, as was Austin, Portland, and Seattle.
Correct.
And if I hear one more person in Beverly Hills, male or female, where I work, you know, where my rent paying gig is, my, you know, people say, what do you do? I said, I'm an actor and a comedian and a podcast host. And they go, oh, so you're a bartender. I'm like, yeah. At any rate, Nashville has just been so bulldozed, but everybody that they just love it, love it, love it, except the people that live there. So at any rate, on that note, but Mount Airy, and Annie's parents live right across the street from you, Mr. Grace?
They lived right across the street from me on an angle. His house is now on bed and breakfast, and you can actually go there and rent it and spend the night in his childhood home. The Aunt Bee character was based on his mother. And she was a seamstress, and she actually made my clothes for Sunday go to meeting when I was a little girl. So,
and did everybody
families
sit
were on, close.
Did you sit on the rock and what was her name?
Geneva.
Geneva. How lovely. And did y'all sit on the front porches on Sunday afternoons and drinking, your mother's, I mean, your family?
Drinking sweet tea.
Sweet. I think I gave up sweet tea when I was about 17. It's just too sweet for me. But
I was fortunate as a child, so I'm not a big fan.
My favorite drink in the world is unsweetened iced tea. I brew a gallon at home, thus the fabulous white teeth. Well, the cigarettes don't help either. But yeah, Mount Airy, that's what? It's just outside of Winston-Salem, just a few miles.
Right. It's 38 miles northwest of Winston-Salem.
Awesome. When was the last time you were back there?
The summer.
Oh, sweet.
Everybody's I went back this summer to visit my sister who still lives there.
That's right. And what we were talking last time about your sister. She's a nurse?
She's retired. She was director of nursing at the hospital there.
The one hospital?
The one hospital.
I mean that respectfully. No, I mean that respectfully. You know, it's just like you said, you can go home again because it's maintained. You know, it's a fiber to me. Charm,
right.
You know.
You know, Nora was born there. And when I went into labor to have her, my sister was director of nursing. My mother was a dietitian. The nurse for my obstetrician was my sister-in-law. And the public health nurse was my cousin-in-law. So I had carte blanche, and everybody was able to go back and be with me. It was crazy. My sister and my sister-in-law were fighting over who was going to give Nora her first bath in the delivery room.
That's sweet.
It was so sweet.
And you're close with your family. That's great.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I'm close with mine, but you know, they're all so scattered out now. So listen, we just got started because between you and Kathy and mostly me rambling on and on. The last time it's come so much fun. The last time on the 26th of October that you guys were on the show.
Right.
But 116 McDougal is an upcoming film that you are executive producer of.
Correct.
And it is the true story of the gaslight in Greenwich Village.
Correct.
Which, from what you told me last time, which is fascinating, it was originally a coal cellar. Mm-hmm. And John Mitchell.
John Mitchell.
Was the, tell us, please.
Original. He was the original founder. He came to New York to visit a friend in Greenwich Village, and he had a flat tire and decided to stay. He was a used car salesman in Pittsburgh at the time, so he didn't have a real big career that he left. So he opened the first coffee shop in Greenwich Village called Cafe Figaro. And it was the first, I guess you would say, the precursor to Starbucks, because it was the first time that there was a place that you could just buy coffee. And it was hugely successful. And he eventually sold that and opened the Gaslight, which was an old coal cellar. And nobody wanted the folk singers, and nobody wanted the beatniks in New York.
It was like the mafia, fun. Right? From your what I've been reading in your memoir, you know, your thing, the mafia, the city government didn't want them because they were
exactly
the punk rockers of their time, per se.
Right. They did not want them there. And the whole reason that John Mitchell put the folk singers in was to turn over the tables, because he couldn't make a living on the number of people that sat in there for hours and hours and hours just to listen to the poetry. So he started putting folk singers in. And in the words of Tom Paxton, if you hadn't turned over the tables, you were fired. And he was fired by John Mitchell on a routine basis, let me tell you, like every other day. And then Tom wouldn't show up and John would call and go, why are you not here? And he's like, you fired me, remember? And he's like, well, yeah, but that's never stopped you before.
I've been in the bar club business for 43 years. The point being is that that's the kind of place that, you know, there's still a few places out there where they're not corporate and they're run like that. And those are my favorite.
Oh yeah.
Now, last time you were telling us that, which y'all listen up, because this is really cool. The, how every, you know, the snapping of the fingers instead of, you know, I'm hip. That started at the Gaslight Cafe.
Yes, it did. And the reason it started is the Gaslight was the coal cellar, but there were like ducts that ran through to the apartments above. And so when they had loud clapping, it disturbed all the people in the above apartments. And so they took John to court, and John had already decided that he was going to settle this in a way that made everybody happy. And so he came up with the idea that instead of clapping, you snap your fingers. And then even when folk music moved to the West Coast, everybody still did it because it was the cool thing to do at that point in time. So it was just a really cool thing that originated because of the need of the apartments above 116.
Are there still apartments there?
There are still apartments there.
That's pretty cool. That's how deaf people applaud too. Snap.
Ah, okay. I did not realize that.
Yeah. I learned that. I went to this party to tell the story. No, I shouldn't. I will. A very good friend of mine. Very good friend of mine. When we were young in Miami, and I mean this with all due respect to deaf and non-speaking people, his brother was a professor at Gallaudet University, which is the number one university in the world for, or it was at the time, for the deaf and non-speaking. So we went to this party. His brother was in. We were living in Miami. We were young punks and, you know, going to the beach every day and partying all night, that sort of thing. And his brother, who was probably 30 at the time, was a professor at Gallaudet. And then he had friends in Miami. We went to a party. The party was fabulous. Everybody at the party, with the exception of myself and Jory Khan, she and David, was non-speaking and, you know, pretty much deaf. But they were all very stylish and cool, and the music was playing, and people are dancing because they, you know, I've been told it's the rhythm. And of course, after about, I don't know, three, four, six shots, we're sitting on the sofa, and David says really loud, he goes, "Hey, Bob." actually he called me Bobby. He's one of the few people in the world that call me Bobby. He goes, "Ain't it wild that we can say anything we want and nobody can hear us?" And I start laughing, and this really big, strong dude, he leans over and he goes, "You know, some of us have partial hearing." And I've never felt so low in my time. I was like, but anyway, that's just another tale from the Bob Dean epilogue. So back to the upcoming film. It's tentatively going to be shot in Pittsburgh. Is that right?
It is. Some parts of it will probably be shot in New York City. But we have a studio here that is over the top incredible, and it's about 250,000 square feet.
We
can do everything that we need to do in that one studio.
Where is it in Pittsburgh?
Crafton. It was a former Bruce Plastics plant that has been taken over and is a Three River Studio.
Oh, cool.
Yes, very cool.
Well, Dave Begoni is the tentative, you know, the signed star. I know you put, you know, and I remember him from Lucifer.
Cool. Yes. Show. Wasn't he great in that?
Yeah. I was kind of, you know, at the same time I was like, ugh, because, you know, but he was fantastic. Yeah.
It's so funny because I had met Dave when he was here at that studio shooting Southpaw.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I met him at a charity event, and we, you know, became good friends. And when I put out the casting call for what I was looking for John Mitchell, he called me up and he goes, "Linda, did you forget about me?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, you're like, you're perfect. You need to audition." So he was hands down the best John Mitchell you could possibly have. From New York, so he's already got the New York accent and. He's really a typical New York tough guy. So he's very much like Mitchell.
Yeah, I was looking at some of his IMDb and that sort of thing, and he really is. He's a genuine.
Yes,
he's a great talent. Let me throw this in real quick, ladies and gentlemen. Call us at 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. So we can hear from you and see what's going on and ask Linda questions and ask me questions and just call.
Call us. We're fun.
We're fun. We don't text. We call. That's right. We should have a text. Ned Sam, of the producer of the show and the owner of LA Talk Radio. I wonder if there could be a texting thing. I hate texting. You know why?
It's necessary.
Anything over a paragraph should be a phone call. And if you get 3 minutes or 4 minutes in a conversation out of me, you're lucky. You know. And I'm not even going to go into my first and last iPhone.
Your iPhone.
I hate it. And everybody else loves it. And I don't. This is how I got sidetracked from the upcoming movie last time. Oh, we have a caller. Hello, caller. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Well, hello, everybody. This is David Buglioni, a.k.a. John Mitchell.
We were just talking about you.
What is going on, everyone?
Oh, we're just talking about 116 and what a great addition to the cast as John Mitchell that you have made.
Oh, my ears must have been ringing then.
And I was just getting ready to tell them about our recent trip to New York.
Oh, yeah. I mean, did you go into the details about, you know, getting invited to Carnegie Hall and having front row tickets to one of the most amazing concerts ever.
But I do have this, which I think is the coolest thing ever. It is an actual ticket, a paper ticket.
Paper.
And in the digital age, compliments of Richard Barone, got an actual.
A little bit this way, the other way too. Yeah. That's groovy.
Anyway, it came in this great red envelope, Carnegie Hall red.
I wanted to jump in real quick.
Yeah.
I apologize because, you know, in an attempt to turn the volume up, I turned it off on my end. So I missed just a couple seconds of that. And Dave, we were just talking about you and it's nice to meet you over the podcast. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking the call, and just wanted to say hello to everybody, all the fans out there, and you know, we got a couple of exciting things that we're going to be announcing shortly. So our trip to New York City was one of them. Again, you know, going to Carnegie Hall and meeting all the performers that used to perform at the Gaslight was
a little treat, bit more in detail,
in itself.
Yes, we were so excited to be going to Carnegie Hall and actually seeing people that we knew performing. It was just like the coolest thing ever. And so we went to dinner prior to that at the Russian Tea Room, which is next door to Carnegie Hall. Mm. Dave, tell them about the experience at the Russian Tea Room.
Well, we wound up getting actually a table in the front of the restaurant. And usually, you know, celebrities and, you know, whatnot, usually they like to travel to the back of the room because they like to kind of be hidden in the back. But we found out that the booth in the front of the Russian Tea Room, which is slightly off to the corner, is the booth that Martin Scorsese sits at all the time, because you're actually hidden more in the front corner booth. So it was kind of interesting. We walked in and, you know, I was sitting in the same seat where Martin Scorsese always dines. So that was kind of a treat as well.
Yeah, and it's so neat when you're you know, just someone that you've admired or a great talent or whatever. It's not like you're, you know, starstruck, but I know exactly the feeling you're talking about. It's really, it's special. It's awesome.
It was, and they treated it really special. And they actually took us on a private tour, and the bear, the 7-foot-tall crystal bear, is still up on the second floor. It's not available for the public, because that's a private event room, but we got that, and Dave has it on his Facebook page. It's incredible. I've been so busy, I haven't even edited and put together photos from the trip yet, but they're coming very soon.
And tell us, well, what else did you? And there was a Bob Dylan and Jose Feliciano, who I just loved.
Yes.
Oh, there was he was phenomenal. When he came really out and he sang California Dream, and I mean, he just blew the audience away. It was such a powerful performance. That man still got it.
There were so many of the icons from the Gaslight, which was really cool. Tom Paxton, who has a lifetime Grammy, was one of the performers, and he's, you know, somebody that I've worked with for the movie. He's very dedicated to it and did a great interview at the Pete Seeger Festival. We took him down to the water and did a video interview with him. And Carolyn Hester was there. Happy Traum was there. Eric Anderson, Maria Muldaur's daughter, Jenny, was there. I mean, it was just a star-studded event. And Carrie Thal, who was Dave Van Ronk's wife back in the day, and she was also his manager, but she was Dylan's first manager. So Terry just wrote a book called My Greenwich Village, Dave, Bob, and Me, I think is the name of it. And it's incredible about the history of that time. So she was there with the book.
Well, I was reading, and you were talking in the story, the true story. So Bob Dylan, what his first audition?
His first audition was there at the Gaslight. In fact, when I initially was asked to do research on this project way back in the beginning of it, it was because of what Bob had written in the Chronicles about John Mitchell that started this whole thing. And then you brought up Mayberry, and that's interesting because I was trying to figure out how to get in touch with Noel Paul Stuckey's
from Peter Paul and Mary
because he was the master of ceremonies at the Gaslight before there was a Peter Paul and Mary. So
no,
I'm like, the person I need to talk to is Noel Paul Stuckey. I didn't know that he went by Noel at that time, so I was calling him Paul. And I found his publicist, and I sent a message to his publicist, who went to IMDb to look me up. And when he looked on Mayberry, looked on IMDb, my trivia is that I'm from Mayberry. So he immediately like picked up the phone and called me. And he's like, the first thing he asked me is, are you really from Mayberry? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, oh my God, I love that town. My parents lived there for 5 years.
No.
So that was the catalyst for even getting in touch with.
That is crazy cool. 6 degrees of separation is there.
Yeah, exactly. So we went to an after party after the concert at the infamous Washington Square Hotel. And I got the opportunity to introduce Dave to Carolyn Hester and introduce him to Tom Paxton. And of course, when we sat down with Tom, it was all over. We were there for hours with him regaling us with stories of the Gaslight. He loves to do that.
And also, we touched on the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Correct.
Which is a friggin' awesome show.
It is an awesome show.
It's actually filmed in Gaslight.
That was, yes. The very first episode, the pilot episode, that club was the Gaslight. The Gaslight was also featured on Mad Men.
A show which led me to, at one point, say I'd never drink and smoke again, but, you know, that's all they know is like, yeah. Well, that's so cool.
You know how many times I've said that, too.
Well, it was just because they were all just drinking and smoking constantly. And I think in Miami in the 80s, that's kind of how I lived, but, you know.
But yeah, just to touch back one thing that Linda said, you know, having the opportunity to, to sit down with Tom Paxton, you know, and have a glass of wine, talking about drinking, having a glass of wine together, and him just telling me stories about the Gaslight back in that day, and, you know, who John Mitchell was, it gave me so much more information, you know, for me to, you know, feed off of and learn from. He told me the stories of, you know, how great John Mitchell was. He was a great man, but, you know, he was a powerful man, and, you know, he protected his kids and he protected his home, and the Gaslight was his home. I don't know if Linda told you, he fired Tom Paxton almost every day, but just to have that opportunity, you know, it was pretty much a dream come true to get so much information that I need to, you know, make this film authentic.
Correct.
It's going to be great.
And my favorite Tom Paxton story, though, involves the song that ended the concert at Carnegie Hall, which was Blowing in the Wind. I mean, that's probably the most iconic song to ever come out of Greenwich Village. And so the end of the Carnegie Hall concert was all of the performers were on stage, arm in arm, singing it, and the audience joining in. So it was really cool. But back to my favorite Tom Paxton story. They had a place they called the Poker Room. And it was actually the Poker Room.
Oh, okay.
It had a round table and chairs in there, and everybody would wait. They had an intercom, and it was the place they hung out until their time to go on stage was. So they all hung out there, even if they weren't performing. But Tom tells me how he walked in one morning, and Bobby Dylan is sitting at Wavy Gravy's Remington typewriter, typing away, and he finishes something and pulls the piece of paper out of the typewriter. And he said, hey, Bobby, what do you got there? And he goes, I just wrote this poem. I think I'm going to try to sell it. Maybe I'll make like $25 or something from it. And he's like, well, do you mind if I look at it? And he's like, no, here, Tom, take a look. So Tom reads the first draft of Blowing in the Wind. And he goes, Bobby, I think you ought to put some music to that. I really think that if you make that into a song, you're going to make more than you're going to make selling it as just a poem. And he goes, you think so? And he's like, yeah, I really do. Because Bob was like, you know, these people were his mentors. He was the youngest of all of them. And he heavily relied on their advice. So that afternoon, he wrote the music to Blowing in the Wind, and performed it that night live at the Gaslight for the first time. That's how fast that happened.
Wow. What an amazing, true story. That's friggin' awesome. To, you know, and like you guys are saying, to be able to talk to these people and Tom and it's amazing. I'm getting a little goosebumps.
Yeah, I was so excited to. Number one, I had never been to a concert at Carnegie Hall, but to go to a concert at Carnegie Hall where you personally knew at least of the five at least five of the people that were on there, was like beyond incredible. And Stephen Petras, who is the historian for 116 McDougal, did all the video choreography for that whole entire concert.
What about the music score for the film?
The music score for the film is already produced and mastered and ready to go. And it's incredible. And it was produced by six-time Grammy Award-winning Jimmy Hoisin. And that's just part of the magic of this movie. Jimmy moved back from L.A. to Pittsburgh shortly before I became involved in this project, because his brother had cancer, and he came back to help his mother take care of his brother in his final days. And I had sent my – this is a really crazy story. You want a crazy story?
Yes.
I had asked my neighbor, who was going to New York, to please go to 116 McDougal and check to see if there was anything in there, because I couldn't find out if it was empty, if there was a club, if there was anything in there. There was a website for a place called the Up and Up, and there was a telephone number, but nobody ever returned my phone calls. Nobody ever answered the phone. So I'm like, if you're there, could you just go and see if there's actually something there and tell the people that I'd like to get in touch with them? So my girlfriend, Rosemary, goes in, gets in the Uber, goes down, and as she's paying the Uber, getting out of the car, she sees a large crowd of people gathered in front of what was 116 McDougal. And she hears a guy on a microphone, and she's hearing Bob Dylan, John Mitchell, Tom Paxton. She's hearing all these keywords that she's been listening to me for all this time. And so she runs over to the guy and introduces herself and said, you know, my friend's a producer on this movie, and she wanted to know if there's anything here. Do you know? And he's like, yes, it's the Up and Up. And, you know, they had a nice conversation. And he's like, would you give her my card and tell her to call me? So he gives Rosemary the card. She looks at it, and it says Pittsburgh Larry. That's the name that's on here, is Pittsburgh Larry. So when she returns, she relays this story to me, gives me the card. So I pick up the phone and call the guy, and I assume that you were talking about John Mitchell because you're from Pittsburgh and you know he's from Pittsburgh. And he's like, I had no idea John Mitchell was from Pittsburgh. He's a rock star in the village. Everybody knows who John Mitchell is and talks about it. And at this point, we're so early in the program, I really didn't know a whole lot about what was going on. And I'm like, well, are you really from Pittsburgh? And he's like, yes. I'm like, do you visit? He's like, I visit my family every time I can. And I'm like, well, the next time you're here, please give me a call. I would love to meet you. And he's like, okay, I will. So within the next 6 months, he calls and he's in Pittsburgh. And I invited him over to my house for a Sunday morning coffee clutch and semi-brunch. So he shows up and he has a guy with him. And the guy's very, very quiet. Doesn't say a lot. He just introduces him as my friend Jimmy. And so we talk about the movie. And when they're getting ready to leave, Jimmy kind of grabs my arm and pulls me aside. And he's like, I want to be part of your project. And I'm like, okay, what would you like to do? And he's like, I want to be part of the album. And I'm like, are you a musician? He's like, well, of sorts, but that's not what I want to do. And I'm like, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to produce your soundtrack. And I'm like, okay, do you have any experience doing this? Yes. Would you like to tell me about it? Well, yeah. And he lists several albums from movies that I have heard of. And I'm like, well, what was your role, you know, with this? He's like, I produced it. And I'm like, well, have you ever, like, won any awards? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, would you like to tell me about that? And he goes, I got six Grammys. And I'm like, you've what? He had six Grammys, and he was such an incredible person that he didn't even want to toot his own horn.
He's humble. That's
very humble.
I love the way you say, what? And your eyeballs went, ooh.
And we talked immediately, you know, within the next week, and decided that this was a perfect fit for him to be the soundtrack producer, the lead. And
it was meant to be.
It was meant to be. And that's been the magic of this movie for so many things. Like I told you, I met Dave at a charity event when he was in Pittsburgh doing Southpaw.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. And which has nothing to do with 116, but Dave Thomas. Oh, Larry. I'm having a senior friggin' moment. I don't know how I crossed the two. Anyway, I apologize to him. But Larry Thomas is cool, too. You know all the right people.
I know all the cool kids.
You sure do. You sat at the cool lunch table.
I do. I have the best friends, honest to God, between Kathy St. George, Larry Thomas, Dave. Luckily, I know Tom Paxton and Carolyn Hester and Stephen. Stephen is fabulous, the guy who's our historian. He's also an author and has written a couple of books about Greenwich Village. And he went with me, actually, to the Dylan concert, and we had front and center seats. And Dylan was at his best. He got a standing ovation when he entered the stage, and it didn't stop. It, like, inspired him to give what I am sure is the best concert I've ever seen him give. Wow. And most of the audience was standing up for the entire concert.
That's amazing.
It was.
I wish
and
I could
Steve, a shout out to Stephen. Stephen has a new baby daughter who was born between the Dylan concert and the Carnegie Hall concert. Literally. His wife is an angel because most women would not want their husband going to a concert and actually being involved in the production of the concert with a new baby at home. But it was great.
And congratulations to him and his wife on the new baby.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Dave, are you still there?
I'm still here. I'm just listening to all the good stories that Linda is sharing.
Have some good stories too. Come on, Dave.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Dave, so you're from Brooklyn, right?
Long Island.
Long Island.
I'm from Long Island.
And where are you now? Where's your home base?
I still have the house. I still have my house in Long Island, and then I also have a house in Florida, which I'm currently at, enjoying the warmer weather here.
Where are you in Florida?
While we try to figure out this strike, even though they kind of made a deal. We're still trying to get back to work and, figure out all this AI stuff and contract stuff. So
that AI is scaring the crap out of me. I don't know about you guys, but it's just popping up everywhere.
Yes. It is. But, I'll be here and then I'll go back up to New York for the holidays. And then, we'll get back to the swing of things in January.
Where are you in Florida, Dave?
Right now, I'm in Clearwater Beach on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't been ruined yet. Clearwater's beautiful.
Yeah, no, thank God. Luckily, they say it's the Indian spirits. So every time a hurricane comes through Clearwater and it's about to hit Tampa and Clearwater, they say that we're surrounded by Indian spirits. So it always goes north or it always goes south. So
that makes sense.
Until the day it hits us, we're blessed with Indian spirits to keep the hurricanes away.
It's just so beautiful in the West Coast. I love it. I lived in Miami for years and Miami Beach before it became SoBe. But yeah, I was there through Hurricane Andrew. And you guys are so lucky that the Indian spirits are keeping that because it sucks after it's,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I tell everybody, especially people, when I say young people that are under 40 now, I'm like, make sure that you have at least $300 in fives and singles in your underwear drawer and keep your gas tank at least 3/4 full all the time. Because once that grid goes down for like a day, let alone 3 weeks like it did in 1993 with Hurricane Andrew, you're screwed.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
But,
all is good.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you sometime in person. I live in Los Angeles. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, originally. But,
I spent 12 years. Well, that's where my career got started, 12 years in L.A. Lived in Marina Del Rey, right on Fiji. And, made my way back to New York because I got cast in a lot of shows in New York. like the Blacklist and FBI and the Blind Spot and all those shows. So I kind of moved back to New York and started working more of the shows in New York.
We were talking about your role on Lucifer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one. Yeah, we should. Well, I was in L.A. at the time when I got cast on that. And, yeah, that was such an incredible role to play, one of the angels, Ibriel, and to work next to Tom Ellis, who's a genius in himself. Yeah, it was a great way to end season 5. That was the season finale. They came back for one more season and then they canceled the show. But yeah, that was a great character. I really enjoyed playing that character.
You know, it's neat, at least for me, because you know I'm an actor and a comedian, which means I'm a bartender. But the point being, though, is to watch. Like in your situation, you know, you started off and your career's taken off and God bless you. That's great. And I know you're working hard. And I have several friends who that's the same thing. You know, I tend bar in Beverly Hills. I've been in a couple different places, but you know, in the business and all, and I've watched at least 4 of my friends whose careers are really taking off like yours. And it's just exciting, you know, not to drop names or anything, but it's just not, you're happy for them and it's great. This one particular fellow, Billy, you know, he it's so fun when you're watching TV, and he and his wife Barbara are really good friends of mine, and she's a big writer. But it's so cool when you're watching TV, and then you're like, "That's my buddy," you know?
Yeah. I love those moments.
The guy that played, I'm trying to think of his name, Dexter. My ex manager, my ex manager, and still good friend, and he and that guy were best friends, and there's neither here nor there. It's just neat when you hear how, you know, what they hanging out and being friends and then poof.
Yeah. And all of a sudden.
Yeah. And he had a great run on that. I mean, how many seasons was that? I mean, 8 seasons or something like that. It was.
And he was just a super cool show guy. He used to come into Wolfgang's when I worked there and he would hang, you know, just a nice guy. All the years I met celebrities working in Beverly Hills, the only that was really, really the two that were really unpleasant, maybe they were just having a bad day, was Diana Ross and Tina Louise, who played Ginger on Gilligan's Island.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. She was also singer in the late 50s. You know, she had that sultry, sexy, romantic voice. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
I have to put in a shout out for Dawn Wells. She was a friend of mine, and she was incredibly sweet and kind and wonderful person.
Dawn Wells, it was funny because growing up in Nashville, she was the one celebrity that everybody knew. And mm-hmm. She lived in Nashville, and you'd see her, like, because Nashville used to be such a tiny little town. But it was so neat because she's beautiful, I thought, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She was really sweet and kind, you know.
Yeah, it was always a controversy between who was the sexiest, Marianne or Ginger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Kathy Garver, I was talking to you about this because I knew the name immediately. I knew Family Affair. So she's in the upcoming film too.
Yes, she is. Kathy Garver of Family Affair played Sissy, one of my favorite characters when she was on that show.
Yeah, she was doll.
A real great art. She is.
And it comes on in the afternoons here, like when I'm getting ready for work, I'll happen to watch it. And it's so funny because what it was like 1966 to 1970 or whatever. And any of those shows like that. And for all you people listening to the Bob Dean Show, yay. You know, to watch the styles change so dramatically in just a few years.
Yes.
You know, going from like, short hair and that sort of thing, like, or the Brady Bunch for, you know, that was in the 70s. But, you know, they go from like clean cut to all of a sudden they all have these giant afros and they're wearing bell bottom pants and such.
Right. One of the cast members from that was just recently on Dancing with the Stars.
Who? Which one?
The oldest.
Greg Brady. Barry Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up watching that show and I'll never forget my mother, Stella, God rest her soul. She was, you could compare her to Maude. B. Arthur in the show Maude.
Oh,
she was outspoken and direct and that sort of thing. And but I'll never forget when I was, it was probably the second season of the Brady Bunch, and I was sitting Indian style, which I couldn't do now if my life depended on it. And mother was standing in the doorway, and I'll never forget, she had Benson and Hedges, her trademark thing, and she goes, "Bobby, I just want to tell you that that show is not real life." And I was like, "What do you mean, Mom?" She goes, "Well, first of all, you're never going to see me waxing the kitchen floor. And second of all, your dad's going to pull in the driveway sometimes, and he's going to be a little drunk." Because remember how Mike would always pull in and hop out with his briefcase, you know?
I love it. Like Barbara Billingsley, who always did her housework in a pair of high heels. Wasn't that incredible?
I have to tell this story. She was the first celebrity that I met in Los Angeles. And you know, I live on Miami Beach. You know, when I say met, you know, and I make it a point of, like, I worked at La Scala and Wolfgang's and that sort of thing. And I got the opportunity to say hello to so many of the people from the old generation to, you know, Keanu Reeves and the people now. And I always just go, "Hello, my name is Bob Dean. And I want to thank you for the music, for the laughs, whatever." Carol Burnett. I met Carol Burnett a few months ago. But Barbara Billingsley, here's the deal. My first job in L.A. was for Nelly's Deli, Nelly's Catering, which, y'all, if you're on Stoner Avenue in West L.A., it's a little alley. You can't find it. Great food. Inexpensive. They do all this catering. Well, Barbara Billingsley's family had the restaurant Billingsley's on Pico. Pico and Sawtelle, close to that. So anyway, I guess she lives in the neighborhood. She comes in this tiny little cafe, and the owner, Sally, goes, "Well, I'm in the back, doing something." And she goes, "Well, Barbara Billingsley's out there." And my jaw just dropped. And she goes, "You want to meet her?" And I was like, "Yes, please." So we go out to the table, and she had to be 90 if she was a day. This was 17, 18 years ago. And she had the trademark pearls on, which I read somewhere that the reason why she always had those pearls is because the lighting in the set or on the set used to reflect on something, the way her neck was sculpted, and it kept lighting. So anyway, to make a long story even longer, so Sally walks out, and she, Miss Billingsley, was a gentleman, and she had just taken a little bite of her sandwich, and Sally goes, "Miss Billingsley, this is Bob Dean. He just moved here. And people want to just say hello." And she looked up. You could see the genuine, sincerity in her eyes, and she's dabbing her chin, like, "Let me chew." And I go, "Hello, Miss Billingsley. My name is Bob Dean. I just moved here from Nashville, Tennessee. My favorite episode of Leave It to Beaver was one where you gave Beaver money for a haircut, but he lost it. Molly gave him a haircut, and then he had a skull cap on, and you almost fainted. It was nice to meet you." And I walked out. I was like, "Did you did?" The whole time I'm talking, Barbara Billingsley's going, which is like pushing back like this. And Sally comes back in the kitchen. She goes, "What the hell was that?" And I go, "I was starstruck."
Crazy.
And Lily Tomlin, though, she was aghast when I worked at La Scala, and she was doing that Desperate Housewives thing. She played the sister. And at any rate, she did, it's like a six. I'm standing by, and the movie The Incredible Shrinking Woman, 1982, with Lily Tomlin and Charles Grodin, is one of my top five favorites of all time. It's just such a parody. They live in Tasty Meadows and all that. And for those of you that might remember, there's a song in the movie that's a commercial that her husband, Charles Grodin, writes. And it goes, galaxy glue, life would go to pieces with that. And I sing it all the time. I've been singing it, So Lily Tomlin walks in. There's nobody at the little bar. She walks right in. She walks right in. She sticks out her hand. She goes, "Hi, I'm Lily." And without missing a beat, I go, "Hi, Lily, I'm Bob Dean. And it's so strange that you're here." And she goes, "Why is that, Bob Dean?" And I go, "Because I've been singing Galaxy Glue all day." And she goes like this. And then she's thinking that she goes, "Oh, my God, that's so weird." And then it was nice because, she and Jane would sit down. And now I monopolize the conversation. But.
No, speaking of being starstruck, I was at Comic-Con in Pittsburgh with Larry Thomas about 2 years ago. And we were just super, super busy. He had like lines like crazy, and neither one of us had eaten. And so Larry snuck off to the green room and grabbed a bite. And so I said, "Okay, I'm going to go grab something in the green room." So I go in the green room, and as soon as I walk in, I am face to face with John Carpenter. And I am a huge fan of his work, right? "Hi, how are you?" And I'm like, "I'm good. How are you?" And I was like so starstruck, right? And so I walked around all behind him, for the buffet line and got all my food and everything. I'm getting ready to take it back to Larry's booth. And I get right next to him, and he took his foot and shoved the chair out in front of me. And he goes, "Have a seat, sweetheart." And, well, you didn't have to ask me twice. I sat down and had lunch with John Carpenter. And I go out and I tell Larry about it. He goes, "What did he say?" I'm like, "I have no idea. He said something about me eating healthy in the beginning, and I blanked out. I have no idea what we talked about the entire time."
Yeah, when he Halloween 1978, that is the coolest scary movie, because it's not all gross like his friend. And it's funny too, because on Orange Drive between Sunset and Hollywood Boulevard is where the two houses are. You know, where, you know, where they cross between Haddonfield, Illinois. But it's really neat. That's one of my favorite things to take friends, you know, to see where Halloween.
Oh, wow. He had the ambulance from the original movie there with him. So it was
cool. He also did the movie They Live with Rowdy Piper. You guys remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and that movie, and Meg Foster was in it. If you remember, she had those beautiful eyes, and a lot of people got her confused with Kirstie Alley. God rest her soul. But that movie is so apropos to the things that are going on now. In all the magazine ads and the billboards, it would be like sleep, consume, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and the homeless situation and all that sort of thing. But yeah, John Carpenter, he's the, you know what? Guess what, Linda? It's what? 9 minutes. We've gone over
my
a minute.
Goodness.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. And Sam has run. Thank you, Sam, because Sam's like, "Bob, pay attention to the clock." I'm like, "Yes, sir, yes, sir." So, Linda, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
Dave, I hope that you'll come back and visit us again or hang out.
Absolutely. Just tell me when we're going to do this again.
Thank you all. Linda Schneider, I haven't met you in person, but any friend of Kathy St. George is a friend of mine.
Absolutely. Awesome, and I'm going to have some exciting news in the near future to announce. So I'll make Dave call in again so we can do that together.
That sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Dave, nice to meet you. Linda,
thank you.
Thank you all for watching the Bob Dean Show. Come back next week and listen and all that. Love you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.